Friday, and that can only mean one thing. It's time for the best of Sell or Die.
The best nuggets of sales wisdom every week, all in one place.
A sales slap in the face. A sales refresher.
I feel refreshed.
I can tell. And if you want to go back and listen to the full episodes, we've made it easy. There are links to each of the episodes right in the show notes.
If you love the podcast, if you're a true Sell or Diehard, and you haven't given us a 5-star review on iTunes yet,
what are you waiting for?
Seriously, Friday is the best day to do it. It helps us so that we can help you.
It's time for the best of the best, the cream of the crop, the creme de la creme, sales grade A red meat. It's time
to sell or die.
Every sale has its kind of frustrations. You know, I read your Sales Buzz letter, and oftentimes it deals with the frustration of not being able to get through, not making enough calls, not doing the right thing. There's a lot of knots in there, and part of that is people just don't love what they do.
If you don't love what you do, you need to get out. I don't care what it is. That's the first thing. But the thing is this: if you don't love what you do because you're not being successful, that's a different conversation that we need to have. A lot of times, and the reason why those newsletters, the reason why I write that is, one, those are questions that people send me, but it's also things that I used to deal with a lot when I was, you know, when I first got started in sales, which I'm still a straight commission sales rep. I've been for 25 years, but when I first got into sales, I was running into all these problems. And the old way of doing it is, well, if they say this, you say that, and have a rebuttal. And the problem is, a lot of times you could avoid the objection by just dealing with it ahead of time. But most salespeople don't know how to do that. They don't know how to ask questions ahead of time to avoid those things.
What are some of the biggest things you see go wrong in outbound communication these days?
Well, the biggest thing is they get lazy and they just think they read a book that says you can send a bunch of emails and make quota, you know, and then so they just said,
wait a minute. Whoa. Why do you even want to make a quota? I want to make a fortune. Quota
exactly.
Doesn't have fortune at the end of it.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that. Yeah. So, but to answer that question is one of the biggest problems is their expectations. Listen, everybody wants an easy button. I get that, right? You want an easy button, you want to make a sale, but if you're going to have to hit an easy button, it's still not going to be as easy as it's been out there. And you're going to have to do the work, but you have to improve the skill level. Sales, there's a science to it, but it's not rocket science. You get a couple of basic steps down, and then you just turn up your output, and you're going to make a ton of cash.
Let's back up a little bit. Where did you grow up?
Oh, man, I just answered this offline.
I just asked him that before you got here.
Everywhere, Jeff, everywhere. So I was originally from the Westchester, White Plains, New York area.
That was hard to tell. I couldn't tell that. Because of your manner of speaking and also your use of hands and arms.
Yeah, well, that's the Italian in me, right?
Right.
So I grew up there. I was born there a little bit. Parents got divorced. Yeah, I went to Arizona in the 80s, which, you know, back in the hair metal days was the best, being out there with all the rock bands and everything. Mm-hmm. That was I got a good story for you guys, who I had my first beer with, if we have time, when I was a kid out there.
Sure.
Don't leave us hanging.
Come on.
All right. So listen, I grew up wanting to be a rock star. Right. So, I mean, that was when I heard Back in Black, you know, that album when I was a kid, that's all I want to do. And I had practice. Went to Arizona to grow up, like I said, in the 80s. I started a band. I was 14. It was labeled Phoenix's youngest heavy metal band. And we got into a nightclub. It was called Rockers. I don't think it's there anymore. And they had Rob Halford of Judas Priest come in, which was AC/DC and Priest are my biggest bands. And we got a chance to meet him and hang out with him. I was 14, and I had my first beer with him. We ordered pitchers of beer, and we just started chugging, man.
That's totally awesome.
That's awesome. I love that.
Totally cool.
Yeah.
Most people can remember their first time for a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Today, when I was training the baseball team, sales team, I told them to ask their customer, tell me about the first game you went to with your dad.
Mm. Nice.
Oh, it's so emotional. It's not even funny. But anyway, you're damn good at what you do. You're still a rocker. You're just rocking in sales instead of on a platform.
That is true.
It requires much less drugs, and you're in Tampa.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Yeah. And that's it's funny you mention that because we did a last time I went out to Inside Sales invited me out to do a thing for them at Dreamforce that's out there in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And you know, my wife and I went out there and it was great. And we're having a good time and I'm walking through the place and word got out that I was there and people started coming up and getting selfies with me and everything.
Oh, cool.
And so then so then she's like, oh great. His head's going to be even bigger than it already is.
Cool. Ego. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Listen, if you're good at what you do, listen, I have a very deep passion to help people who are selling. I know exactly what it feels like to have the phone feel like a 25-pound weight and you just can't pick it up anymore.
And the next guy just hung up on you.
Yeah. And especially, you know, back then, you know, I was going through recycling. The funny thing is this, one of my first straight commission sales jobs, we were selling computer diagnostics to computer repair tech shops. And we didn't even have computers ourselves. We had what we called white sheets. So these were names and numbers of companies on a piece of 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, 5 to a column, 2 columns, and they were just on the table over there, the little, you know, card table stacked this thick. And you come in, you grab your leads, you start going down the list. They've been called 100 times, and we're probably one of the reasons why the do not call list was invented.
Exactly. Exactly. You know?
That's funny. I love that.
Yeah. So, but that's where I cut my teeth, you know, and everybody around me, you know, I mean, I was in a room of like 80 sales reps just pounding the phones. I mean, it's just like right out of the movie Boiler Room. Fabulous movie, by the way. Right. But it was just right out of that scene. And they would hire, you know, 10 people a week because people would just quit all the time. They couldn't hack it. And you had this small group of reps that were constantly, when you look on the board year after year, it was the same 4 or 5 reps in the top all the time. And the other 75 was just constant turnover. You had a small group that would stay there, but they would really never amount to anything.
Jennifer, you believe, as I do, that even the most local, small business, retail business, what have you, can all benefit from a presence on social media, including having a podcast, a YouTube channel, a blog, and they don't have to have 100,000 downloads a month as you and Jeffrey have. The two of you, of course, have an international presence and an international business. So how does the local small business owner approach this in a New York minute type of way?
Sure. So you're a local business, which means you rely on the community to feed you and your people. You rely on the community to go to your store and buy from you and then tell everyone else they know to go buy from you too. And so why not make them the stars of your podcast where you depends on your business, okay, and what this may, you know, it depends on who you're serving, but why not interview them and bring awareness to who they are and make them the stars? And then now you make, you know, Joe in his neighborhood the star of your podcast. All of a sudden, he's going to share it out with all of his friends. Well, if Joe's your customer, it's likely he knows other Joes that can buy from you and that might want to buy from you. And they're going to hear your value. They're going to hear your tips and stuff on his interview and get to know you. And there's something about a podcast where people really get to know who you are for you. It's really cool. I mean, people have messaged me and they know all this stuff about me and we've never met. And I'm like, how do you know all of this? They're like, oh, I listen to Sell or Die. I'm a diehard. Oh, okay. And so why don't you become known as the local business podcast, whatever your store is or whatever, that people listen to on their commute every single day. And now you're top of mind every single day. And it gives you times and real, you know, connection times while you're connecting with these people to bring up, well, hey, we have this amazing new thing in this week. And I just wanted to let you guys know that this episode is sponsored by our deal of the week, which is X, you know, or this week is sponsored by our newest product, which is Y, you know, and just loop those things in, not, you know, for too long, but do that along with interviews, spotlighting people in your community.
Yeah, that's wonderful advice. Jennifer, you're being a sales authority. I want to talk to you about kicking the sales slump. As sales professionals, we all go through, well, I can't say all, I do. And I suspect I'm far from the only one. So how do we use your New York Minute principles to get out of a sales slump and back to where the world is right again?
So I think everyone at some point in time has gone through a sales slump. And that's okay, because the first thing is recognizing that you're in a sales slump so that you can get out of the sales slump. And one of the things I have in the book is a link to my ebook, 27winningstrategies.com, where you can download my 27 strategies to get out of the slump. But, you know, one of the biggest ones is your ability to first recognize and then B, change your attitude about it. Because if you're in a slump, you likely have a bad or negative attitude about what's going on, why you aren't getting the sales you need. And so, you know, there's so many things you can do. I mean, even just meditating for 10 minutes, and I know it sounds very woo or whatever to someone who's never meditated before, start with a minute. That silence, pause in your head creates so much clarity, and it doesn't happen until you try it. And so, you know, figure out, well, why are you in a sales slump? What's going on? Is something in your life upsetting you, impacting your business? Is something, you know, maybe you don't believe, have a strong enough belief in your products or services, but start there and then use different strategies to start kicking the sales slump. But I will tell you, like, the biggest thing is it begins with you and your foundation, your attitude, your beliefs, your desire, your commitment to win. All of those things are going to play such a huge role.
You ended the book with four words. They were love what you do, exclamation point. So important, isn't it?
It's everything. I mean, I wake up, you can probably hear the passion in my voice, right? I love what I do. And I can tell you, I haven't always been there. I was at a company for 6.5 years, of which the first four, I loved it. And after that, it started to dislike it a little bit, not like it as much, that kind of thing, until the point where I was like, oh, I dread going here every day. But sometimes people do what they have to do because it's job security and you need money and you need to feed your babies and you need to pay for your mortgage and you need to afford your car. And I totally get it. But you can't. If you do it just out of necessity and you don't love it, you're never going to thrive in it. So figure out what it is you love to do and figure out a way, while you're doing the thing you have to do, to start doing the thing you love to do a little bit at a time. And it might be volunteering on the weekends. It might be, you know, let's say you want to get into a different sales role. You might call, but you can't take it on because it's commission only or something like that. And you need the other financial stability at first until you build up your clients. Well, go tell them you want to sell for them for free for one day a week while you build it up, you know, just to get in the door. And then obviously you want to make commissions. But, you know, figure out a way to start incorporating the things you love to do, because that will change your life. If you wake up and you can love what you do every day, you will just be in such a great place.
The great Coach Jim Johnson.
So there's an event that you are arguably most known for, where you played your team manager, Jason McElwain, in your final home game. Can you tell us about Jason and your relationship with him?
Yeah, Jason came to our program as a sophomore, and he tried out for our team for three consecutive years. I was the varsity coach, so he was our team manager for the JV team, and then he came out his junior and senior year for the varsity team, the team I coached. Jason's on the autism spectrum. He's also learning disabled. And he was very small in stature back in high school. In fact, his senior year, he's probably 5'9", 115 pounds, soaking wet. But Jason had a big heart, and he was so passionate about basketball. And one of my missions was I'd like to help people make their dreams come true. And so I offered Jason the team manager job his junior and senior year after doing the JVs. And his senior year, because he kept coming to everything, and I just got to the point where I really became attached to him. And I said to a senior when I was telling him that he was unfortunately not good enough to make the team, that I wanted to give him a gift for his loyalty. And that was, I was going to put him in uniform and hopefully get him into our final home game, which we call senior night. And
cool.
Senior night.
That's it. Well, that's for just, awesome. First of all, yeah. That's cool as hell. You know that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the kid went home
And
whatever he had to do, whoever he had to brag to, whatever the circumstance was, this kid was in hog heaven.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was pretty excited. In fact, I kid people periodically that year, you would ask me about the uniform. And of course, I define periodically as about every other day. So he was pretty pumped up. Well, the interesting thing, I ended up writing a book about the season because we had so much adversity that year that I nearly resigned. We had a lot of parental issues. But fortunately, with my staff and my family, they said, you know, Jim, you always talk about leadership, but when when it's the trying times that the tough get going, they don't leave. And so we weathered that storm and we really, after Christmas, got the team back together and we started having a lot of success. We had a good team and that brought us to senior night, which is February 15th. And I gave Jason his uniform on February 13th. It was way too big, but there was a rumor going around school that he slept in it for two straight nights.
So, this kid's in uniform. He's autistic. He's on the bench.
Right.
He has been a loyal follower of the team since the first day in high school. It's in his last game.
Right.
He's been a manager, never been a player, never dribbled the ball on the court other than practices, I'm sure.
Right.
You put him in, it's a total unknown situation.
Right.
Somebody gives him the ball and he shoots from 3 points, correct?
And first, he makes the three-pointer corner.
Yeah, and he makes a shot.
No, the first shot he missed by 6 feet, and that's when I told people that I know you're not supposed to pray in the public schools, but I was praying to God.
Okay, so then
what happened?
Wait, he makes a second shot. I've seen the video 50 times.
But actually, the second shot is not on any of the videos. He actually misses a short shot from about 10 feet, but he at least hit the rim. So I was thinking to myself, God must be listening to me because we're closer. And then his third possession, he actually had another three-pointer, and that's when he made his first shot. And I thought to myself, God must be a basketball fan. Not only has he scored, he's got a three-pointer. It can't get better than this.
Oh, man.
In the next 3 minutes, as I kid people, he turned into his boyhood idol, Kobe Bryant, and he started making shot after shot. And to take you through the last minute, the two things I'll never forget, with about a minute to go, I'm still sitting on the bench, which I rarely done, but I was so overwhelmed with emotion. Tears were still rolling down my face. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And I get a tap on my shoulder and I look behind me and it's Jason's mother and she's bawling her eyes out. Gives me a big hug. And she whispers in my ear, Coach, this is the best gift you could ever give my son. Of course, what did I do? I cried harder.
Yeah, of course.
And then how the game ends is Spencer Porter, our opponent that night. And I want to give kudos to their team and their coach. They're great sports that night. They score with about 10 seconds to go. And this is literally the truth. Our player takes it out and normally throws it to our point guard, but this time he throws it right to J-Mac. And J-Mac's dribbling down, the clock's kicking down. And I'm thinking, oh, he's just going to go in for a layup. Oh, no. He stops like 2 feet behind the three-point line, almost an NBA three, and he lets it go. And I'm thinking, Jason, don't shoot for this way too far. He launches a rainbow. It swishes. Yeah. I look over. Our student body runs on the floor. Our players run on the floor. Then Jason's mother runs on the floor. The little lady, she's like 5'2", 100 pounds, and she bobs through everybody, gives him a big hug. And then our players put him up on his shoulders, and he's got the game ball under his head. And I have no idea how many points he had scored. And our public address announcer comes on and says, the leading scorer for the Trojans tonight, J-Mac, with 20 points. And I start laughing. I think, if he'd have played the whole game, he scored 160.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that was...
That's incredible.
It's hard to watch that video and not cry. I'll just say that.
Yeah, I've seen it hundreds of times, and I still cry.
Yeah.
What were you expecting before you put him on?
Well, the two things. First of all, the really neat thing, because I mentioned that we had a lot of struggles during the season. So we really kept preaching what a team was all about. And they, those players that were on the floor when Jason came on showed the essence of teamwork, because he was the only one that shot in the last 4 minutes. They kept passing the ball. In fact, I still kid Jason because I see him all the time. I'm still looking for your first assist because he never passed the ball.
That's funny.
The thing I was really hoping is I wanted to get him in with enough time so he could score a basket. I thought if he scored a basket, that's a memory he'll cherish for the rest of his life.
That's so cool. I mean, obviously, it's a leadership decision, and which you took and succeeded with. It could have gone any which way.
Right.
This kid has memorialized himself, the school, the team, you. And everybody, it was his mom and dad. I mean, it was an unbelievable event that just sort of materialized. It wasn't something where you practiced it. Like, you know, when you get the ball to here, you shoot. No, he didn't.
It was definitely a leadership position to take, but it also seems like it was a risk because it could have cost you the game. So how did you battle that in your mind to make that decision?
Well, to me, it was just the right thing to do because of all his loyalty to our program. And I believe the team felt the same way. And although there's always a risk that, you know, he could have fallen right on his face, I just, in my mind, I was like, you know what, Jason deserves this chance. And I wanted to give him that opportunity. And if he failed, he failed. In fact, I kid people because one of the things we always talked about with our team is what we call next play, where when we make a mistake, you know, in basketball, the game's so fast, you know, you don't have time to, you know, pout and so you just move on. And the great illustration, Jason, what he absorbed from all our teachings was when he missed that first shot, he missed by a mile. I mean, it was a ball. It didn't bother him. It didn't faze him. Hey, next play. He moves on and, you know, misses the second shot, but then he makes one. And then after that, as he says, he got hot as a pistol. The rest is.
This has been a Sell or Die Extra. If you like it and you like the show and you like all the information that's inside of it, go to thegittimerlearningacademy.com and subscribe. What are you doing? What's this noise?
I'm going to GettoverLearningAcademy.com to subscribe.
Way to go. Way to go. You can also subscribe to Sell or Die on Overcast if you have an iPhone. Or if you don't, go to the store and get an iPhone. Or if you don't, go to iTunes or Stitcher and come back every single Tuesday for a full Sell or Die episode with expert sales analysis that will help you do the one thing you're hoping for, make more sales.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit SellorDieNetwork.com.